from the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois. This is the Closing Market Report. It's the fifth day of February 2010. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzolo of Global Commodity Analytics in Lafayette, Indiana. And then later in the half hour, we'll discuss the cash grain market with Bruce Bostard. He's the manager of the Ludlow Co-op Elevator Company out of Ludlow, Illinois. In agricultural news, China has imposed import duties on U.S. chicken. USDA has decided to track livestock in the United States in a different way. And U.S. and Brazilian officials are still bickering over cotton subsidies in this nation. Dave Dickey will have details of these stories shortly. And then it's pretty likely you've heard about the Feeding America Hunger 2010 survey released this week. I'll give you a few extra details and tell you how the agricultural college on this campus was involved in overseeing the data right here on this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report. The Closing Market Report is a production of Illinois Public Media from the University of Illinois.
This stock and commodity report is made possible with support from Bates Commodities in Normal. Bates Commodities can be reached at 1-800-383-4647 or on the internet at batescom.net.
In Chicago on this Friday afternoon, futures finished the day like this. The nearby March wheat, 2.5 cents lower at 473.25. May at 488, down 2 cents. July down a penny and 3/4 at $5.50. July in Kansas City at 507, a nickel lower today. Corn pit now, nearby March contract to 351.5, down 2.5. The May at 363, 2.25 lower. July corn at 373, 2.5 cents lower. September at $3.80, down 2.5. And December, 387, down 2.75. Soy complex, March beans, 913.5. The settlement price, 0.5 lower. The May at 924.25, down 0.5. And July, 932.75, down 0.75 today. August soybeans at 928.75, 1.25 lower. September at 914.25, down 3.75. And the nearby November contract is trading the new crop at 903.5, down 6.5. March bean meal at 271 is down 20. May at 265, up 80 on the afternoon. Bean oil at 21 lower at $37. The May at 37.48, down 20 on the afternoon. Live cattle futures, February contract on the day, 87.42.5, up 87.5. April at $90.40, up 32.5. March feeders at 98.32.5, $1.07.5 higher. The April's at 99.67.5, up 70 cents. And the February lean hogs today, up 55 at 66.70. The April down 20 at 66.72.5. This is the Closing Market Report. Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. Crude oil futures, a settlement price today at $71.19 a barrel, down $1.95. March contract in the ethanol at $1.74.9, 2.6 lower. Natural gas on the lead option at $5.52.3, up $0.07. The RBOB at $1.89 even, down 6 cents today. And the diesel fuel or heating oil, $1.88.1, that's down 5.3 on the afternoon. Gold futures at $1,052.20 on their settlement price, down $10.20. And the Dow currently trading just about 108 points lower at 98.94. That's right below 10,000 at 98.94. U.S. dollar at 80.44 is up 0.53 on the day. And the CRB index at 258.55 is down 0.51 on the afternoon, or is down 5.1 on the afternoon. Here's what the weather forecast for the two-state region looks like. There is a winter weather advisory in effect for portions of west central and southwestern Illinois, that until midnight, for much of central into parts of southeastern Illinois, and for west central into parts of southwestern Indiana until 6 a.m. tomorrow, and far parts of northern Indiana until 10 a.m. tomorrow morning. And for parts of southern Illinois and for southwestern Indiana from noon to 3 a.m. tomorrow. A winter storm warning is in effect for much of central into parts of south central Indiana from 6 a.m. tomorrow and for far east central and southeastern Indiana until 6 p.m. tomorrow. The weather forecast says it's going to be messy. In fact, travel expected in much of Illinois and Indiana to be really messy, especially later today and tonight in some areas into tomorrow. Quiet weather then expected over the weekend. More snow, though, likely early next week, especially Monday night into Tuesday. Much colder than average weather expected all of next week.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
The closing market report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at agrigold.com or at 800-262-7333.
You're listening to the Closing Mark Report. It's a production of Illinois Public Media. It's a Friday afternoon. On the line with us to take a look at what happened in the world of agricultural futures is Mike Zuzulo of Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting out of Lafayette, Indiana. Good afternoon to you, Mike.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Well, a little messy here, but I guess skies are a little better where you are, but I don't think they're going to stay that way.
I'd rather have the weather messy than the markets, quite frankly. This has been one heck of a week, hasn't it?
Well, they're both messy at the moment. You know, and I was looking, actually, at the weekly trade as opposed to the daily trade. And it's
right.
Kind of funny because the weekly trade, it sounded like a really messy week as we went through it, but we had that one big up day in the middle. And honestly, if you take a look, for instance, at corn futures today, which were, what, down 2.5 cents on the week, March corn was down just 5 cents, December down 3.75 cents. And it's been a messy trade, but it didn't look like it hurt all that much.
No, and, you know, the March beans and the March wheat even look better. We're only down 0.5 cents in March beans for the week and 0.75 cents in March wheat. So I hope, Todd, at this point, the best possible scenario would be that much like earlier in the week, midweek, where the grains were the bellwether on Wednesday for a big drop in the stocks and the commodities as a whole the next day, maybe Friday's today's close by the grains and the way we're able to shape things up is a good forecast for maybe a bottom in the crude and the gold and the equities. And it's been interesting since the grains closed and the daytime trade closed for the gold and the crude oil, a lot of short covering has been taking place. The dollar's made a new 3-hour low. The gold is trading positive again, only about $3 off its high for the day. Natural gas is back positive near its high for the day. And crude oil is now about $2 a barrel off its low. So maybe we'll get a sell signal on the dollar chart by today's close. That would be really, really healthy and maybe give us a chance to go through the weekend and make sure that these countries that everybody's worried about over in Europe are not in as bad a shape as maybe the market had feared, and we can start all over again next week. That's kind of what this week's close kind of said to me.
You know, I was thinking about all the things that we heard this week, and the dollar in particular, and trying to put into my mind what they really meant. And the one that I'm wondering mostly about is the idea that some currencies are undervalued to the U.S. dollar, in particular the Chinese currency. And what impact that may or may not have had in the marketplace. Did they really dismiss that on the idea that there's not going to be enough pressure to make the Chinese do something, or is there something there that spooked the market?
Well, I think this week when the outside markets and the commodities and stocks both fell, and we had that risk sentiment back on the table for stocks and commodities early week, the default issue came to mind, and then all of a sudden the risk sentiment turned negative again, and the people and investors fled right back into the dollar and the U.S. bonds. I think a big reason why they did go ahead and fly into the U.S. treasuries and back into the dollar was because China holds so much of our dollars. And so I actually believe that the U.S. dollar is being strengthened right now by the Chinese and their strong economic health and how many dollars and treasuries they're actually holding, because let's face it, our treasury, our balance sheet, our deficit is not any better. And I'm speaking literally, our deficit's no better than Italy's right now as far as how much we're running in terms of a government deficit, how much debt we have out there that we have to pay back in percentage terms of our GDP. And so Italy was one of the five countries that was most worried about this week. The United States is not in any better shape. I think the two things we have going for us is we're the reserve currency of the world still, and the Chinese have bought the most amount of treasuries of any other country, and they're the ones that everybody looks up to right now. So I think it's kind of an odd, abnormal thing to have happen, but I think it explains a lot, especially why wouldn't the gold be going higher if everybody was worried about all these country defaults? You know, historically, gold would be a great safe haven to go back into because it's not currency-related at all. But this week, the gold fell just like every other commodity fell.
I was listening to the BBC earlier today on a Friday, and it's interesting to get other nation's perspective on what's happening. And they were discussing Europe. Of course, they're part of the European Union, and they were discussing the union itself. But almost, it was funny the way they laid it out, that it was almost a country of the day that was in a problem this week. So that, you know, one country today and on Tuesday, and then one on Wednesday and one on Thursday. And I don't know what exactly to make that of that other than, well, let's look at it today and tomorrow and the next day. And are they really in that much trouble? They may be. Or is there just hype surrounding the trouble that they're in?
I don't think it's hype, because actually Portugal's debt rating was lowered back in December before Christmas. I think it was around the 10th or 11th of December. Portugal led this even before Greece. And I think what happens now in this global economy is that we're so integrated, it's almost like dominoes set up, and that if you have pretty important countries like Portugal, Spain, Italy, Ireland, Greece, those were the big five, it seemed, that were really making the big waves, that those waves would turn into ripple effects and blend over and bleed into the bigger parts of Europe. And unfortunately, history would say after a big international financial crisis, you can't expect some sovereign defaults within the next year or two or three, and that those ripple effects do indeed happen, and that's how contagion, so to speak, spreads. So I'm sure part of it is nervousness and just wild, you know, emotion and speculation on the part of the investment community, but they also go by the credit default swaps and what kind of interest rates those countries are running and how much borrowing they can take on. I think Portugal this week said that they wanted to try and float a bond sale for, I think it was $500 million. Only $300 million was taken by the investment community, because they know that a sovereign debt default, when a government actually defaults on its debt, there's nothing the creditors can do about it except just renegotiate to whatever the sovereign country wants to renegotiate it to, kind of like Argentina back in the 1990s. So it's serious enough that we need to take note of it. But I think going back to last week, a week ago when you and I talked, I would stand by what we said and what I talked about. Is I really think aggregate demand is bottoming. I think the unemployment numbers show that today. And I think grain demand is bottoming. And I think the exports for wheat in particular that we saw this week is bottoming too. So as long as we don't have one of these major debt catastrophes, I think the demand low is being carved out, and I think the EPA helped us especially this week.
Well, on that good note, we'll let you go for the afternoon.
How okay, be safe, Todd.
Hey, you too. Thanks so much. Thanks. That is Mike Zuzulo. He's with Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting out of Lafayette, Indiana.
Agricultural programs are made possible by First Midwest Bank, serving Illinois' agricultural community with locations in Champaign, Danville, Galesburg, Morris, and McHenry. More information is available from Tom Testel and Morris at 815-941-2184. First Midwest Bank, member FDIC, an equal housing lender.
The 20th annual All-Day Agriculture Outlook meeting is March 9th at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana. And we have a dynamite lineup, including Sue Martin, Steve Freed, Chip Flory, Glenn Ring, Joe Persaki, John Bondurant, and Ed Kieser. The cost is $20 and includes a continental breakfast and lunch. Register now at 800-528-7980 and avoid the long registration line. We take all major credit cards. Call 800-528-7980 and we'll mail you your tickets ahead of the event.
Be sure to do that, and you can always visit our website at willag.org, that's willag.org, and catch all the details of our all-day ag outlook. Again, the address, willag.org. Here's Dave Dickey again. Now he's got the ag news for the afternoon.
In agricultural news, China announced anti-dumping duties of up to 105.4% today on imports of U.S. chicken products, adding to trade strains with Washington. China's Commerce Ministry says a preliminary investigation concluded U.S. exports were being sold at improperly low prices that harmed Chinese competitors. The chicken duties take effect February 13th and apply to whole birds, chicken sausage, and other products. Included are chicken feet, which most Americans throw away, but which are a delicacy in southern China. Companies that appeal the ruling will pay lower duties of 43.1% to 80.5%. Tyson Foods will be charged the lowest rate, while Pilgrim's Pride is at the top end of that range. USDA wants to take a new tack on how to keep track of livestock in the U.S. in order to trace outbreaks of disease, making the effort cheaper and shifting responsibility to state governments. Under the new framework, identification requirements would be focused on groups of livestock rather than on individual animals and would only be applied when they are shipped between states. U.S. and Brazilian officials have begun talks to try to settle a trade dispute at the World Trade Organization over U.S. cotton subsidies. Brazil has already identified more than 200 possible U.S. targets for trade retaliation, ranging from foodstuffs to textiles to pharmaceuticals. The EPA is meeting with a scientific advisory panel to get guidance on the relative value of studies on humans exposed to pesticides. The panel is made up of scientists from across the U.S., Canada, and the United Kingdom with expertise in toxicology, environmental health, animal and human medicine, and risk assessment. It's the agency's first real effort to evaluate the growing amount of data and reports that look at pesticide use. The results of this SAP are expected around the time of an April hearing that will look directly at non-cancer effects and environmental issues related to atrazine. Agrochemicals company Syngenta today reported a 1% drop in full-year net profits because of higher raw material costs, less demand for pesticides, and a stronger dollar. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Hey, thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey is Director of Agricultural Programming for Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Lernard Seed Service, an independent dealer providing DeKalb and Asgrow seed products, including Genuity SmartStax corn hybrids. Lernard Seed Service provides information and services to help customers in East Central Illinois maximize profits. Lernard Seed Service, 217-497-2270.
Up next, you know, Feeding America, the nation's largest domestic hunger relief organization, has updated its study of emergency food distribution and assistance in the United States. I'll have some of the findings from that survey and how the University of Illinois Agricultural College assisted in tallying and reviewing the data. The report is titled Hunger in America 2010. Feeding America, the organization behind the study, says it is the largest, most comprehensive study of domestic emergency food assistance ever conducted. It set out to collect statistically valid data on the national charitable response to hunger and the people served by food pantries, soup kitchens, and shelters in the Feeding America network. Last year, about 37 million people used food pantries and soup kitchens in the United States. That's about 73% more than stood in those lines in 1997, and 75% of those 37 million folks, according to government statistics, were food insecure. That means there were times when they really didn't know when or where their next meal might come from. Craig Gunderson, an ag economist in the Agricultural College at the University of Illinois, helped oversee the study. He was on the technical advisory group and says while the 75% increase in the number of people using food pantries from 1997 is shocking, it's an even more fearful number when looked at on a shorter horizon nationwide.
If you look at food insecurity, there's quite a bit of variation across the country. For example, southern states have substantially higher rates of food insecurity than other parts of the country. Within this specific report, one of the main things they were looking at is how things have changed since 2005. So from 2005 to 2009, how many more people are utilizing food pantries and soup kitchens across the country? And there was about a 40% increase across the country in people using these from 2005 through 2009. The Eastern Illinois Food Bank saw even a more marked increase, as they saw increases of 110% from 2005 through 2009.
Again, here are the most current national numbers. 37 million Americans are getting food from the Feeding America Network. Of those, about 75% are food insecure. They don't know all the time if they'll get their next meal. That's Feeding America, and a smaller subset of the nearly 50 million people USDA counts as food insecure nationwide. The reasons for the increase are pretty simple, says Illinois' Craig Gunderson.
There's two main reasons why the number of people using food banks increases. First of all, it's increased demand due to the recent economic downturn. Since 2005, a lot more people are in need of assistance. So that's part of the reason. The second reason, more specifically Eastern Illinois, is they've worked hard to expand their services that they provide to people. So there's more food available, more outlets for food, and more programs that reach out to people who are in need of assistance. So it's both the fact is that there was increased demand within Eastern Illinois, but as importantly, increased supply of food provided by Eastern Illinois Food Bank.
When things go economically wrong in an area and right in the distribution system, demand for food assistance goes up, and so does the ability of the system to service that demand. The Hunger in America 2010 survey shows demand has increased dramatically over the last 4 years, and that in some places the ability to serve the needs of people in need has grown along with the demand, but that's not always the case. The survey results and data, national and local, are available on the Feeding America website at feedingamerica.org. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason. Hey, one quick note of disclosure here. I, of course, work for University of Illinois Extension, and as a note of disclosure, am a member of the Eastern Illinois Food Bank Board, and it is a Feeding America affiliate.
Agricultural information is made possible with support from ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report on a Friday afternoon. It is a production of Illinois Public Media. Time to check in on what's been happening in the world of the agricultural cash grain markets. Bruce Bostard of the Ludlow Co-op Elevator Company is with us today. Good afternoon to you, Bruce.
Good afternoon, Todd. It's a beautiful day here in Ludlow.
Is that actually true?
No.
I didn't think so. It's starting to get pretty ugly out there, is it not?
Yes, it is. A little bit slick.
Yeah, a little slick. In fact, we're going to allow the folks that are coming in for Commodity Week to stay home. And we'll do them by phone here shortly. So we'll have Commodity Week posted pretty quickly to our website this afternoon. I already talked to Tom Fritz at EFG in Chicago. He'll be on the second half. We can't do them all together because the phone system won't handle everybody. But oh, we'll get it all done and posted, and we'll know what they have to say about the marketplace. What do you have to say this afternoon about the market?
Well, at least we're seeing some basis improvement out here. It's kind of the classic board down, basis up. Going on, cash movement has slowed up with the break back. Nearby corn basis has been up 3 cents since we talked last Friday, and beans up a couple cents. So that's good. Pretty small consolation if you're a flat pricer in the face of this, though.
Mm-hmm, would think so. What do you think will happen next week?
Have to see. You know, we've got a couple reports coming out. We'll be doing the report next week on supply demand. A variety of opinions on that. I guess my bias is that we're just not shipping much corn every week, and I think that's going to catch up to us sometime here on the supply demand. And then we have that all important baseline production coming up later on for the USDA looking for next year.
Indeed, all of those things coming up. About 10 seconds, your bids are?
We are at 329 on nearby corn, 352 new crop, 902 nearby beans, and 864 on the new crop.
Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Back in 2 minutes.
It's National Stuffed Mushroom Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1790, John Bachman was born, a naturalist and Lutheran minister. He wrote some of the text for John James Audubon's Albums of Birds and Mammals of North America. He also published his own works on botany, agriculture, and southern animals. In 1810, Alexis Soyer was born, a French chef and author. He opened kitchens in Ireland during the famine to sell food at one-half price, and he was also the inventor of several stoves and kitchen utensils. In 1824, J.W. Goodrich introduced rubber galoshes, thin rubber boots to fit over shoes during inclement weather. In 1906, Clyde W. Tombaugh was born, an American astronomer. He discovered Pluto in 1930. Born on a farm near Streator, Illinois, his first telescope was made from old farm equipment parts. In 1930, candy maker Frank C. Mars of Minnesota introduced the Snickers bar. And in 1941, Roy J. Plunkett received a U.S. patent for Teflon. He discovered it by accident in 1938. And that's This Day in Agricultural History.
A quick reminder, please do visit our website and find out all the details about our all-day Ag Outlook meeting. It is Tuesday, March the 9th. Details at willag.org. You're listening to the Closing Mark Report. It's a production of Illinois Public Media on a Friday afternoon. Time to check in on the agricultural weather forecast. And the folks at the Illinois State Water Survey, the Midwestern Regional Climate Center, on the line with us. Director Steve Hilberg is there. Good afternoon, Steve.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Tell me about the weather this afternoon. It's fading around at this point and maybe a little later on, too.
Yeah, it's going to be persistent but not terribly heavy event. We've had some heavier snow actually west of east central Illinois, probably more like out toward Christian County, Piatt, and Macon counties out to the west a little bit. But the main low actually is down to our southeast now, and the energy will be transferring to the east coast, where they're likely to have what we would call a historic east coast snowstorm out there over the weekend. It's already snowing there, and upwards of 2 feet of snow in some places in the mid-Atlantic region. Here we'll see the snow continue, probably accumulating snow into tonight, perhaps as late as midnight, and then things taper off. And we'll have some flurries even probably tomorrow morning, and might even be a few breaks in the cloud by late afternoon. Yes, tomorrow afternoon, but we're going to have a pretty strong upper low moving across us, and that'll keep the atmosphere unstable. So if we do even get a brief period of clearing, it probably won't last, and we'll see some flurries during the day. A cold, sunny day Sunday, and then looks like more snow moving in Monday afternoon into Tuesday, and that could be another accumulating event. Won't be as wet as this one because it's going to be a little bit colder than it is right now. So two big events here, or two moderate events, I should say, here in a matter of a few days.
So I suppose really the suggestion is just move about with caution and stay home if you need to or can. But it's not terribly bad outside.
No, right? Because temperatures are near freezing today. In fact, Willard's 33 now. So any salt on the roads is helping the roads that are particularly well-traveled, and that's making a big difference. And that will be okay probably until tonight when we start getting some colder air in here and things start to freeze a bit. So Mondays might be actually more a little problematic if we get what it looks like we're going to get now. It could be several inches of snow. It's going to be at temperatures in the 20s, so it'll be a bit drier snow, and we won't have quite the melting that we have now.
A minute and a half left. January is gone. You're a climatologist. How did it compare across the Midwest?
Well, actually, January was cool month in general. We did have that period of dry weather for January, which helped offset some of the cold weather we had. But in general, January temperatures across the Midwest and Illinois in particular were 1 to 4 degrees below normal. The coldest part of the state was over in the west. And so it was not a warm January by any means. And it's been a generally cool winter here in the central Midwest, too. It's not quite the typical El Nino pattern we'd see in terms of temperatures here. But we were somewhat on the dry side and also much cooler than normal.
Steve, thanks for being with us.
All right, Todd.
You have a good day. Steve Hilberg is with the Midwestern Regional Climate Center, where he serves as the director. Joins us here on a Friday afternoon on the Closing Mark Report. Be sure to visit our website at willag.org. All the folks will be on Commodity Week with us by phone, so we'll get that posted fairly early this afternoon if you want to get to it. I would think maybe by, oh, I don't know, 3:30, 4 o'clock today, we'll have it up at WILLAG.org. Have a great afternoon. I'm Todd Gleason.